Chapter 2. Half an hour later, everyone was on the bridge, seated at the workstations, heads tilted back to regard the ceiling-mounted holo displays, apart from Pike, who was watching the one at his own console.
"Ready when you are, Scar," he said.
"Very well, Bran. I shall begin."
All the holo displays switched from webby anims to the brighter standard planetary summary. A pale blue world spun at the centre, flanked by stat tables, atmospheric analysis, biosphere data, climactic overviews, mean temperature gradients, and other parameters.
"This is Nadisha 2, the ship AI said. "A habitable world currently deep in the trough of an ice age that recurs every 70,000 years. The world about which this vessel assumed orbit some 20.8 hours ago."
Abruptly, the image changed to show a different world, its ashen face mottled with dull brown patches and dark grey streaks and overlaid with a violent cyclonic weather system, angry swirls of storm surging across the seas and land masses. The stat summaries were dynamic and augmented by supplementary columns which moved forward every 30 seconds or so, providing additional info from air, water and soil analyses.
"This, however, is the world around which we are orbiting now. It is 7.9% larger by overall surface area than Nadisha 2, but has 21.3% less oceanic surface."
"Is that a city?"
Wynne Foskell was indicating a section of the planet's surface that she had magnified, and which Scar quickly shared across the other displays. Pike leaned forward and saw, half obscured by a bank of cloud, the unmistakable regular shapes and grids of some kind of metropolis. Also highly evident were the clusters and lines of bomb craters.
"Yes," said Scar. "Image analysis reveals the remains of extensive areas of advanced development, patterns of usage consistent with standard models of residential conurbations and built-up urban centres, as well as transport conduits and hubs. Similar habitation nodes are widespread but deserted, at least in the swathe of planetary surface I have been able to scan."
Punjo Bex raised a long finger to point at the unfolding desolation.
"It looks as if war has wrecked this world," he said. "Scar, have the usual delights of battle been unleashed here?"
"If you refer to environmental degradation, that is correct. I dispatched a small disposable probe as part of the macro scan, and the data recovered is undeniable. Not only is the environment highly irradiated, but the air is almost a stew of lethal biological agents. Yet the long-range biosensors have picked up life signs of small creatures, mainly in scattered packs, probably scavengers. Most prevalent form of vegetation seems to be a type of clinging creeper. Rivers, lakes, and coastal water stretches are highly polluted."
"Scar! Have you come up with any ideas to explain why this radioactive ball of mud is here and Nadisha 2 ain't?"
Pike frowned.
"You know, any idea backed by what you've discovered so far?"
"Sorry, Bran, but thus far I have insufficient data with which to construct a reasoned hypothesis. Speculation would seem to be the only method open to us."
"Fine. Speculate away."
"I would still require parameters within which to evolve such a conjecture."
Pike drummed his fingers on the console.
"Okay, so tell me, are there any signs of sentient beings still alive down there? Communities, bases, anything?"
"Thus far, I have directly scanned less than 18% of the surface area. I have detected no transmissions, no subspace casts, no power generation signatures, no variations in the surface temperature that would indicate outlets from hidden habitats, and no life forms that meet sentient behaviour profiles."
"So, essentially, it's a lifeless radioactive ball of mud," Pike said. "Just what I needed."
"Scar,
Have you also scanned for drive traces in the immediate vicinity?
Several vessels have been operating here, and there is one thrust emission profile that matches that of Kor's ship. But all drive traces in the greater gravimetric shell are fragmented or dispersed. Any explanation would be speculative, but I have detected a strange residual resonance on the subspace boundary, implying that something capable of generating immensely powerful inertial fields was manoeuvring through this system, causing a muddying of the nearby real space locale.
Pike's mood slumped on hearing this. You're saying there's no way we can track down that scumbag Kor?
I'm afraid that there's no trail to find.
Not good, Pike thought. Damn. Are we going to have to go back to Tajnap Orbital? We might pick up some leads on Kor and his ship if we're lucky, but the docking and fueling fees would really eat into what's left of the funds. Dear Mother of God, if we come up empty-handed, I could be faced with having to sell off the loaders, maybe even the shuttle.
He suddenly became aware that the others were watching him.
So, Scar, about this planet, are you saying that it's totally uninhabitable? Not a chance of finding real, living, intelligent life.
My sensors have now scanned 19.3% of the surface without finding evidence of such, Bran. However, it cannot be ruled out.
You know, I can't help thinking about how that gobshite Kor went to a fair bit of trouble to divert attention away from here, so...
He swung his gaze across the crew.
I say we let Scar finish a survey and see what crops up.
There were nods at this, a couple of shrugs, and Dervler giving him a thoughtful look.
Good, he went on. Scar, how long will it take to complete this scan of yours?
2 hours and 55 minutes, maintaining current level of detail analysis.
Fine, you go ahead and finish it.
Pike got to his feet.
In the meantime, we can get on with putting the stores in order. But, Chief, said Ansel, shouldn't we try and figure out how the original Nadisha 2 turned into that poisonous hell?
Now halfway to the hatch, Pike paused.
Thought it was obvious, he said. Someone came along, swapped that nice clean icy world, and left a toxic bombed out heap of rubble in its place. Why, do you have a different notion?
Well, no. But aren't you interested in who did it and why?
Not especially. Anyone slinging around that kind of tech is someone whose way I plan to stay out of. Kor, on the other hand, tricked us and tried to kill us, and I intend to get hold of what's rightfully ours.
And what if Kor is involved with these planet thieves? Said Dervler. What then?
Can't see it myself. Why would ultra-high-tech planet jackers hire a thug like Kor to get hold of a gadget from a less developed civilization? No, my bet is that he's working for a gang of were-runners looking to stay one step ahead of the Earther Uglies. Either way, we're all going to have to be just a bit extra deadly. So, while Scar is working, I suggest that we do the same and find some useful chores to occupy ourselves for the next couple of hours. Cref, you're with me. We really need to sort out the storage booths.
Minutes later, Pike and the Henkayan were back aft, trying to get a reckoning of what needed attention. He had Kref do some restacking of the lighter crates while he worked on the stackerbot in the armoured storage, where heavy-duty items like hull plates, drive couplings and weapon mountings were kept. About half an hour later, Mojag appeared at the open hatch and said,
Captain, can I have a word?
Of course. Step into my office.
Mojag picked his way around an angled heap of dislodged hull plates while Pike upended a crate for him to sit on. He sat down, legs together, hands on his bony knees, his somber gaze angled down at the deck. Pike, tinkering with the innards of the stackerbot, waited. After a moment, Mojag cleared his throat.
Captain, there's something I need to tell you.
If it's too upsetting to deal with Oleg's remains, I can get Kref and Ansel to...
Oh no, I've dealt with that already,
said Mojag.
wrapped it in poly, and stuffed it in a stasis drawer in sickbay. It's something else that you need to know about Oleg.
About Oleg? Pike had thought that Mojag was about to ask for severance when they next hit port, but now he was puzzled. Okay, I'm listening. Mojag smiled faintly.
Do you remember when you hired us nearly 2 years ago?
During that stopover at Darien Orbital, yes, I remember.
I made my hire us pitch and gave you a summary of our skills and those involving my data implant.
He tapped the side of his head.
Everything I told you about the prosthesis was absolutely truthful, but I didn't really go into detail on the full range of its functions. Sure, there is a huge amount of storage in there. I have all the high European classical music of the 18th and 19th centuries, for example, and it takes up a tiny fraction of the main store.
Pike regarded him. I'm assuming that this omission has not been the cause of any difficulties in our dealings. Mojag's eyes widened.
No, no, Captain. Not in the least.
Okay, so what's this got to do with Oleg?
Mojag's gaze wandered off a little, and he gave a faintly sardonic half-smile.
Remember that cargo of Genadapt cow zygotes we smuggled to Florester about a year ago?
Pike smiled wryly at the memory. The zygotes had been stored in waist-high stasis canisters, 400 of them, which they had collected from a secluded biolab on a grey-law world in the fourth Modinel, and ferried across the Earth-sphere border to a comparatively new human colony world called Florester. All went smoothly after the pickup, no hitches at all, until they touched down on Florester. The agreed drop-off point was near the mouth of a wooded valley, and they had offloaded about a third of the consignment when unseen hostiles opened up with small arms fire. Mojag and Oleg had been driving the loaders and were forced to take cover while rounds and beam pulses flew either way, with the Scarabus caught in the middle. Boundary disagreements between their client and his well-armed neighbour had erupted into a full-blown range war earlier that day, and it took a nerve-wracking hour before the return fire persuaded the neighbour's forces to withdraw.
Yes, that was a touch more arduous than I would have cared for, Pike said. But we were still well paid for our trouble.
And I knew, and Oleg knew, that risk is part of the job,
Mojag said.
But not long after, Oleg sat me down and asked me for a favor, a very specific favor that only I could fulfill.
With your data implant, Pike said. Mojag nodded.
After that little episode, you diverted to a system on the Gurlan border.
Urjef Sersax, that amalgamated hub city in the asteroid belt.
Yes, big maze of a place,
Mojag said.
Me and Oleg asked around, and eventually found a Corto services vendor who agreed to deep scan Oleg's brain and create a metafractal copy of his mind state.
Wait a second.
Which was then transloaded into my data implant.
Mojag regarded Pike warily.
So, strictly speaking, Oleg is still alive, in a sense.
Pike stared at him for a moment or two, then burst out laughing, his thoughts caught between surprise, disbelief, and a momentary dash of the absurd.
Sorry, Mojag, not making fun or being disrespectful, he said. But you're serious? You've been walking around all these months with a copy of Oleg in your head. Why would he do such a thing? Did he think he was going to die?
He wasn't expecting death, Captain, despite the inherent risks, and he knew that you always kept our safety in mind.
Mojack gazed upwards and sighed.
He just wanted to increase the chances of finishing his spur song.
And what would that be?
A long poem describing all the key moments of a Kiskashin's life. The Kiskashin are an ancient race with several distinct branches, and Oleg's branch, the Idekri, are scrupulous about maintaining the Spursong tradition.
Pike was nonplussed. This copy of Oleg you've been carrying around all this while, it's been writing poetry.
Not just that, Mojack said. We converse on many subjects.
How? Pike said. Are you talking with him now? Is he listening to us?
He can observe what I observe, and we usually meet and chat in a virtual meeting place I've set aside in my data implant.
Pike smiled and nodded, despite a continuing puzzlement. Well, I can truthfully say that I never imagined that I would ever have a conversation like this with, well, with anyone. I mean, I know about the AI companion implants they have on Earth, although I haven't seen many lately.
They went severely out of fashion after the Battle of Darien and the failed AI coup in the Hegemony, said Mojack.
Just as well, Pike said. Gives me the crawls just thinking about it.
This is nothing like that, Captain,
Mojack said.
Oleg was, is, a friend.
Yes, I get that. Have you spoken to Davler about it?
Not yet. I'm unsure of how to proceed.
Be straight with her. That usually works. And I'm glad that you came to tell me as well, although I should warn you that I won't be paying you 2 shares. Mojack grinned.
Furthest thing from my mind, Captain.
At which point, Scar's voice spoke from the Vokers out in the corridor. Captain Pike to the bridge. This is a command alert. Stackerbot repairs forgotten, Pike got to his feet.
Scar,
he said loudly.
What's new?
A few moments ago, my sensors picked up a compressed communications burst from a location on the planet's surface. Linguistic subsystem is currently analysing.
Right, I'm on my way.
With Mojack hard on his heels, Pike left the storage booth and hurried along to the companionway leading forward. A minute or two later, he was striding onto the vacant bridge.
Any luck with that translation yet, Scar?
The comburst is a verbal message, but the syllabic groups have no match in my database. The syntactic analysis, however, strongly implies a plea for aid. The voice stress evaluation corroborates.
So, what's happening around down there?
Pike said as he dropped into his leather couch, which creaked in protest.
Any sentient life forms?
No, Bran. But there is a group of lesser creatures gathered around a hillside structure which could be shielding occupants from being scanned. From the same location, I am also detecting what could be energy weapon discharges. Suddenly Pike was back on his feet, feeling invigorated.
Right, rescue mission.
He thumbed the shipwide on his console.
Cref, when? This is the captain. Get yourselves to the shuttle bay and break out the heavy gear.
He looked up.
Scar, how dangerous is the environment down there?
The hillside structure is sited on the periphery of a ruined city, which seems to have avoided being hit by nuclear weapons. The weather system, however, still blows around a variety of toxic risks, weak residues of aerolized biochem agents, even pulverized dust carrying motes of radioactive material. I should recommend full hazmat rigs, Bran. But if you decide to use just face breathers and ensure to leave no skin uncovered, you should suffer no ill effects, as long as planetside activity is kept as brief as possible. Got it. Anything on that translation yet?
Sorry, Bran. I'm not any further forward. I need to converse with a native speaker in order to gain a basic understanding.
See what I can do about that.
Pike turned to Mojag, who had been peaceably observing the developing situation.
Mojag, don't forget to let Dovler in on the secret.
Mojag looked reluctant.
How do you imagine she might react?
Pike shrugged. Ah, the mysteries of a woman. I'll tell you this, though. If you don't tell her and she finds out later, it might not go too well for you.
I take your point with gratitude.
Pike grinned and headed for the bridge hatchway. When he reached the main hold, he encountered Dervla coming out of the double sliding doors.
Scar tells me that you're taking the shuttle down to the poisonous mudball on some daft rescue mission, she said, the hardness in her eyes belying her composed smile.
I cannot tell a lie, Pike said, hurrying past her. There's folks down there who need help, our skillful, well-armed help.
Inside, the shuttle had been lowered from the shadowy fuel and refit area above the launch ramp. Close by, Kref and Wynne were standing next to a big pull-out rack, trying on pieces of body armour.
I thought about getting at you for putting your own crew in mortal danger, Dervla said, following him in. But truth is, they're just as crazy as you are.
What a thing to say about your crewmates, said Wynne Foskell, as she snapped a magazine up into an assault rifle.
Well, naturally, I meant crazy in a good way.
Kref paused from filling a backpack with extra ammunition, his broad forehead creased with a frown.
Am I crazy? Why does Dervla think we are crazy, Captain?
Pike shook his head. It's okay. It's not you she thinks is crazy. However, I would certainly be crazy to go on this mission without those Lewison heavy pistols which are hanging right next to you.
The Henkayan chuckled.
With the explosive rounds.
More firepower is better than less.
By now, Pike had strapped body armour onto his torso, arms and legs. The holstered guns that Kref tossed to him were claw-bonded to either hip. He almost felt invulnerable, encased in all this gear, but he knew that he would be slower on his feet.
Yeah, well, looking like Captain Dangerbad is one thing, staying alive is another.
Okay, he said, time to go, Scar, until we get back, Dovler is in command.
Understood, Bran.
Dervla crossed her arms.
So, do I get to keep the ship if you don't come back?
As they reached the shuttle's gaping hatch, Pike glanced back over his shoulder.
Sorry, that's not what it says in my will.
You have a will?
He laughed.
Keep an eye on things on the bridge, dear Hutt. Don't want to get caught by any surprises.
With that, he tugged the heavy hatch down and thumbed the autoseal. Bolts clunked, and the hydraulics made the hatch airtight. Then he turned to regard Kref and Wynne, the hulking Henkayans standing over the diminutive, almost elfin human. Yet, from past experience, he knew that it would be difficult to say who was the more deadly in combat.
Ready to ride to the rescue, you crazies?
Kref snorted, and Wynne shrugged.
As ever, she said.
Out in the hold, the pre-launch system screened off the shuttle bay with layered force fields designed to prevent atmosphere leakage while shielding against any thrusters' backwash. From a monitoring recess in the hold bulkhead, Dervla watched the underside bay doors part and the wedge-nosed shuttle swing down on the guide rails. Grips snapped open, rear manoeuvring thrusters emitted bright half-second bursts, and the craft was gone.
They should be okay, do you think?
She glanced up to see Mojag standing between the open entry doors.
Well, they're lugging enough heavy weapons for a small war.
She paused.
But this hunt for Khor is cracked.
I think that bastard is connected to this planet-jacking operation somehow, and Bran is going to get us all killed.
She shook her head, reining in her temper.
Hopefully, not today,
Mojag said.
Yeah, just a day's worth of good luck is all I'm asking for at the moment.
Dervla. Was wondering if you can spare a few minutes. There's something I need to tell you.
Well, I have to get to the bridge to monitor the feeds for Bran and bear witness to his mighty triumph over some mutant radioactive mouse or the like. Can you tell me about it on the way?
I can certainly do that.
So he did. By the time they reached the bridge, she was listening with uneasy fascination to the explanation of how the Oleg in Mojag's head was just as aware of events as he was, and how when the real Oleg was found dead, the Oleg copy had wanted his existence announced straight away, thinking that this would forestall grief and upset since he was actually still alive, in a way. Mojag, however, had thought this inadvisable.
I felt, at first, that our crewmates would need time to come to terms with the loss of the flesh and blood, Oleg,
he said.
And then, after a while, we could reveal the copy's existence. But, in the light of the changing situation, we decided to let the captain in on our secret, and he said to tell you.
By now, Dervla was seated at Pike's console, trying to clear away some of the cans, food trays, schematic flexies, miscellaneous components, and trick tools. I think your instinct was right, she said. The others wouldn't see a copy of him as being the same as the original. She frowned. And of course, he's hearing all this from me as well. Just how like him is it? Mojag's smile was a little sad.
It was a highly detailed scan, down to the metafractal range. In my mind, it sounds and speaks and thinks exactly like him.
But doesn't he feel... The AI Scar's voice interrupted her. Dervla, there is an incoming comm feed from the shuttle. I'll take it here, Scar. The command console's holodisplay winked on to show a side view of the shuttle's cockpit. Pike was closest and gave a rakish smile, while Wynne waved from the co-pilot's station.
So glad you could join us, Pike said. In the interests of fast engagement, we opted for a plunge re-entry, so we should reach the target location in about 20 minutes.
Plunge re-entry, Dervla said. I bet that was fun.
In the display, Wynne Foskell rolled her eyes. You have no idea.
If we could keep the mutinous commentary for later, Pike said, we have a mission to carry out. So, while we manoeuvre for approach, Dervla will coordinate with Scar on the wider picture, using her judgment to spot any potential hazards.
Yes, my captain, Dervla said, giving a quick salute.
Dervla shall. I'll be remembering this mockery when it comes to reckoning the bonuses, Pike said. Now, can we get on with it?
Glancing round, Dervla saw Mojag perched on the edge of the command console, smiling and shaking his head. Sharing the smile, she shrugged and went about the task in hand. Scar provided additional screen layers, detailing environmental and lifeform readings at the target location, as well as local and regional overviews. Also, there were sensor scans from both the planet's near-space environs and the wider system, and, as far as she could see, there was no threat-level activity, no sign of intruders or anomalous presences. If something sinister was happening, it was happening somewhere else.
Nothing to report, Dervla said on the open comlink. No contacts.
Any change at the target location? Said Pike.
The local scan says that the Predator pack lost a few to weapons fire, but others have joined.
Sounds shady.
Right. We're still some minutes out, so while we get the masks and head cams ready, I'll need you to stay on station.
Not got anything else to do? She said.
Don't worry. We got you covered.
As attention within the shuttle shifted to landing prep, Punjo and Ansel arrived on the bridge together. A muttered exchange between them was cut off by Ansel with a palm gesture and the word later. The tall Egetsi nodded, then came over to kneel by the command console, long hands folded and resting on the edge of the desk surround. Ansel stood back a few feet, leaning against the bulkhead.
Shuttle is 73 seconds from touchdown, said the AI, switching to headcam feeds.
The single steady view of the shuttle cockpit was replaced by three bleached, grainy, jerky visuals from the headgear cams. Dervla had had to deal with these feeds before and adjusted their filters individually before arriving at a measure of shared clarity.
I'll be taking point, said Pike, now looking into Wynn's cam. Cref and Wynn will be on rear flanks.
He fiddled with his mask, setting it firmly into position, then gave a thumbs up.
Sensors show four of the lesser life forms gathering around the shuttle, Bran, said Scar.
Okay, time we chased off the wildlife,
Pike said, punching the release code into the hatch controls. The hatch was hardly open when a slender, long-necked, scaly head thrust itself through the gap, closely followed by a skinny, taloned limb and a second. The view from all three headcams jerked about while everyone started shouting. Cref and Wynn urging Pike to just shoot the thing, shoot it now. Pike was yelling back that he didn't want to wreck the hatch while holding it shut on the snapping, lashing beast. Through the clamour, Dervla heard Wynn say, "Screw this!" as the cam view ducked under Pike's arms and angled up at the intruder. Then she raised her laser carbine, shoved it against the bottom of the creature's neck, and pulled the trigger. With the first hot, white burst, the thing shrieked, and with the second, it writhed in agony as it tore itself back outside. Dervla thought that Pike would then tug the hatch shut. Instead, he pushed it open and dived through, guns blazing. She exchanged an appalled look with Mojag before going back to the headcam displays. That first frantic encounter set the tone for the intense minutes that followed. Pike's assault left two of the scaled creatures blown apart and scared any others off into the cover of smashed buildings. The shuttle was parked on level ground at the foot of a cracked, rubble-strewn road that swept up a hillside past yet more near-leveled ruins. Pike pointed with one of his heavy pistols at what looked like a curved canopy jutting from a rocky outcrop shouldering out of the hill halfway up.
"That's the police," he said. "We better hurry."
"Hostiles," said Wynn, who was looking at a handheld tactical sensor.
"The two we missed."
The two that Pike had killed both had six long jointed legs, which strongly suggested that they were ground dwellers. The next pair launched themselves from atop crumbling sections of wall, gliding to the attack on stretched out membranes. Cref and Wynn were quick enough to burn them down in mid-flight, and, at Dervla's request, Wynn went up close with her headcam, revealing that they had four limbs and shorter necks. They fought more of the lizard things on their way uphill, and almost every encounter introduced another variety. Some had four legs and a long, lashing tail. Others had two small, grabbing forelimbs and muscular rear legs that allowed them to make huge leaps. A sub-variant had longer, more powerful legs on which it could run with unnerving swiftness. Other types had two front legs and a serpent-like body, or bony horns jutting from shoulders or spine, or... Teratogeny had clearly run riot through the lizard's gene pool, whether via radioactivity or some vile bio-vector engineered to weaken and distort the bonds of DNA. Dervla had seen the effects of something similar on some Gamedra nomads who unsuccessfully tried to hire Pike and the Scarabus during a job stop at Blacknest a couple of years ago. Their forebears had been victims of a mutagen attack, the consequences of which had been terrible, as was their hunger for vengeance. These mutated lizards, while fast and savage, were also stupid enough to be shot or burnt down before they got too close. The anxiety, shared by Dervla, Mojag, Ansel and Punjo, eased as their shipmates saw off all attacks and drew close to the hillside refuge where the distress signal was coming from. All three cam feeds swung in watchful arcs to left and right, although Pike's was the first to show just who they had come to rescue. In the shadows, below the curved canopy, a barrier of stone slabs, corroded metal poles, and battered containers had been built across a wide entrance. Dead lizards lay in heaps before it, and their blood spattered the stones. Forms moved in the gloom beyond. Dervler watched with rapt attention, both eager and wary at what might await Pike and the others. Suddenly, a dark humanoid hand, gripping a slender-barreled pistol, jabbed out through a gap in the barricade, pointing at Pike. The hand's dark hue, Dervler saw, was due to some kind of tight-fitting glove, while the weapon was levelled unwaveringly at the captain's head. A voice spoke a brief string of harsh syllables, impatient and commanding. Pike holstered his own sidearms and raised one hand.
"My name is Captain Pike. We come in peace to rescue you, blah, blah, blah. Scar, please tell me that you've cracked this language, otherwise this thing might turn ugly, I'm thinking."
"I have incorporated those new words, Bran, but I am no closer to certainty."
"Well, if we don't come up with some way to communicate, I might as well sing all 10 verses of A Donegal Lass There Was and see if that gets us any further forward. You know, that or just turn around and go back to the frackin' shuttle."
On the bridge, Mojag uttered a low whistle. Dervla grinned and shook her head. "I've heard worse, trust me." Then she leaned forward, attention caught by some exchange of raised voices taking place behind the barricade. The argument swiftly abated, however, and was followed by the sound of a throat being cleared.
"Smeek your name."
Over the feed, Wynne said, "What was that? What did he say?" Another quarrelsome babble came from the hidden shadows, then the voice spoke again.
"Smeek your name."
"That was Anglic," Pike said over the feed. "Did that sound like Anglic?"
"Sounded like he was asking you to speak your name," said Dervler. "That might be preferable to 10 verses of A Donegal Lass There Was, eh?"
"Thank you for that,"
Pike said, ignoring the sound of Wynne stifling her laughter as he turned back to the barricade.
"Greetings. My name is Captain Brannan Pike, and we followed your distress beacon with the aim of helping you off this wreck of a world."
There was no response, and on Wynne's cam, Pike turned and shrugged. Before he could say a word, the voice spoke again.
"More."
"Eh? You want me to keep gabbing?"
"More."
"Okay. Keep the head right. So, as I said, I am captain of the good ship Scarabus, whose expert and courteous crew ensure the smooth and efficient operation of all shipboard activities."
On the bridge, Ansel and Mojag were standing to attention and making mock salutes to the holoscreen and each other. Dervla had to struggle to keep from laughing out loud.
"And as you see, we're all quite well armed. In fact, certainly well enough to take care of your local vermin problem. And to tell you the truth, I don't know how much longer I can keep up this bloody jabbering."
Someone behind the barricade shouted. Other voices answered, some in querying tones. The weapon aimed at Pike was withdrawn, and a moment later a section of the barricade was dragged aside, metal edges dragging on concrete. A figure came out, a very human-looking sentient wearing battered body armour, seemingly collected from several differing sources. He was brawnily built and slightly shorter than Pike, had a thick head of black hair and a neatly clipped black beard. One hand held the pistol from before, steadily couched at waist level, covering Pike and the others. A second and a third humanoid stepped out of the shadows, both of a similar physique and likewise attired, with pistols similarly deployed. Overall, they reminded Dervler of Kor and his men, with their brute, low-tech air. Then, something like a wheelchair emerged from the gap, only it was more like a large inclined cradle in which a strange figure lay. Dervla adjusted the holo display, sharpening the picture quality as the reclining figure was steered over towards Pike by a fourth bearded humanoid. Unlike the first three, this one's hair and beard were decorated with bright red streaks. Although the cradled figure was bundled up in grey and dark green robes, Dervla could tell that this was a much shorter creature than the others, a metre and a half tall at most. Its face was narrow and shrivelled, and the skin appeared sallow and unwell. Drooping eyelids made it, possibly he, seem only partially awake, but as the wheeled cradle stopped before Pike, they opened fully and sharp eyes stared up. Dervla frowned. Not only was the stretcher case a different species from its bearded companions, it had also been subject to radical augmentation. Arms stirred beneath the crumpled robes and folds slipped aside to reveal its hands resting atop its midriff. But instead of hands, they were clusters of finely engineered rods and intricate instruments, some clad in glass or sections of a black material, others etched with circuitry or bearing slender parallel branchings or wound with tiny wires that trailed back up into voluminous sleeves. Gently restless motions gave an impression of fingers, adding to the unsettling sight.
English is the language, said the small reclining figure in a deep voice marred by laboured wheezing. Your language, Captain. Am I correct?
It is, after a fashion. The wheelchair's passenger turned his head and muttered a few words to the man who had pushed him out from the redoubt. The man with the red-streaked beard listened and gave only a nod while giving the three humans a dark, assessing gaze.
This is Gobrosan Mav, the small figure said. He leads us. I am Toolbearer Hechek, Captain. May I ask how you come to be here on this ravaged world?
Watching from the bridge, Dervla said, Who calls it English anymore? Bit old-fashioned, eh? Pike, though, ignored her comments.
We were following the trail of a scumbag who killed one of my crew and cheated us out of our property, and the trail led us to more closely examine this planet.
He gave a dry laugh.
Which is an odd place, to put it mildly.
Who was this murderer, if I might ask?
He called himself Khor, a big, muscly bastard.
At the mention of the name, Gobrosan Mav straightened, his expression suddenly alert and grim. He spoke briefly to Toolbearer Hechek, who gave a wordless nod, then addressed Pike again.
Khor is known to us,
Hechek said.
We have much cause to hate him. His purposes and loyalties have been revealed to us, and we would be able to lead you to him. In return, we would humbly ask for transport to a suitable world in this locale, and perhaps some medical attention for one of our number.
Dervla nodded, muttering, Yes, we must. Pike also nodded.
We would be more than happy to get you off this mudball, he said. And is it yourself that needs the doctoring?
Hechek smiled.
In the course of our adversities, I acquired a wound to my leg.
He tapped the cradling frame with one of those bizarre instrument fingers.
We were forced to improvise.
He must be valuable to Gibrosi what's-his-name, then, said Dervla. We have a few handy devices aboard the Scarabus, Pike said. I'm sure we can do something for you.
We are grateful. Is your vessel nearby?
The Scarabus is in orbit, Pike said. Our shuttle is waiting further down that road. By the time we return to the ship, the rest of my crew will have quarters ready for you.
We are in your hands, Captain, and in your debt.
The combined groups moved out from under the canopy's shadow, with weapons ready and eyes scanning the shattered buildings to either side. Back on the bridge, Dervla turned to Mojag and Ansel.
Well now, looks like we've got new passengers coming aboard, and I don't think they're the paying kind.